We have conquered outer space, but not inner space. Not lust, not anger, not greed, not envy. We have cleared up the air, but polluted the soul. We have split the atom, but not our prejudice. We have higher incomes, but lower morals. We are becoming long on quality, quantity, but short on quality. Next. These are the times of tall men and short character, steep profits and shallow relationships. These are the times of world peace, but domestic warfare. More leisure, but less fun. More kinds of food, but less nutrition. Fast food. These are the days of two incomes, but more divorce. Of fancier houses, but broken homes. Conclusion. It is a time when there is much in the show window and nothing in the stock room. Life, it makes you think. It's a very beautiful statement which management people, philosophers, scientists are analyzing in their own way. Just think about this statement. It's a very beautiful conclusion. It says, it is a time when there is much in the show window and nothing in the stock room. It's very significant. That means, in essence, life has become very superficial. Relationships are superficial, breaking at the tip of, just at the drop of a hat. Character, very superficial. In fact, Stephen Covey, who is this management guru, Seven Habits of Effective People and all, I was just reading that book. He says, before World War, it was an ethic of character. People were judged, they were respected, and they were valued and adored for their character. But today, it's a question of very superficial personality. How you smile, how you present yourself, present yourself to others. People are least bothered about what is in the stock room. It's only in the show window. It's so superficial. In fact, during this time, I will give you an example of what he means by, from character ethic, it has moved to personality ethic. Today, it's a question of personality. How you present yourself. Doesn't matter what stuff you are made of. But if you can effectively talk, you can effectively present yourself, if you can smile better, superficially, then you are selected. Very nice. I was reading a book long back, I don't know currently, about this man, Dale Carnegie. Very famous in the 60s, 70s. So this man had written, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Selling like hotcakes. And he was my very favorite author. I would read, How to Win Friends and Influence. I was very poor with friends. I couldn't just relate, So this fellow said, How to Win Friends. Remember their names. Remember what they like. Remember their date of birth. Put a card, post a card. Remember what their favorite colors are, what their favorite items are. So I had a tough time, I had to remember all these things. That's not my nature somehow. But then, all of a sudden, I heard in the newspaper that this fellow died. How he died? He simply jumped out of the 33rd floor of his New York skyscraper and committed suicide. The moment I heard he jumped out, I just took my book and threw it in the dustbin. You may say, why? He may die, but his thing works. But you just think about it. He is talking about how to win friends and influence people. Now, who is a friend? A friend in need is a friend indeed. And when do you need the most? At the time of distress. This fellow was distressed. He did not have one person to share his sorrow. If you share your sorrow, they divide. If you share your joys, they multiply, they say. Right? Now this man was so miserable, he simply committed suicide. Now, one question all of you may ask if you are intelligent enough. We just discussed death is a big problem, no one wants to die. But for Dale Carnegie, death was a solution for all his problems, loneliness, misery that he was feeling within. Are the scriptures wrong? No. How? For Dale Carnegie, actually it's described in the scriptures, death is very painful. Why we don't want to die? Death is like 42,000 scorpions biting at the same time. I don't see any expression on your face. But if I were to repeat it in a village, people would faint. Anyone here have experienced a scorpion bite? Nobody. That's why. If you have experienced a scorpion bite, people die not out of poison but out of pain. It's so painful. It's like a burning charcoal placed on your body and tied with a bandage. Miserable. Death is like 42,000 scorpions biting at the same time. Why? Because, just imagine, if someone dies, your near and dear one dies. During this bomb blast, one lady, she came, she was crying like anything. Because her only daughter, husband has died, nobody else. The only life for she lived was for a daughter. And she died in this near this Air India building. Burned to pieces, she couldn't even see her face to do the last rites. She was crying like anything. She said, that's the only person I survived for. It was so painful to her heart. Nothing had happened to her body. She was crying and crying and crying. It's so painful. Because one near and dear relative had died. Another person crying because he had gangrene of the finger. And the doctor said, your finger has to be chopped. Your hand has to be, palm has to be chopped off. He didn't want to lose that finger. Doctor, I'm going to pay you any amount. Please save this finger. Ultimately, it went to the hand, and the whole hand had to be chopped off. It was just, you know, like drying up, like a twig. So nobody wants to lose one hand. Nobody wants to lose one relative. Nobody wants to lose one's possessions. Nobody wants to lose one's strength, one's wisdom. But what is death? Nobody wants to lose one's friends. What is death? Death means at one shot, all of it, not only your finger, but your whole body, which is the essence of your enjoyment. That's going to be finished. All your relatives crying, but they can't do anything. All your friends that you lived for, finished. All that you aspired for and struggled to earn, finished. Everything that you ever aspired for is going to be taken away. One shot. Therefore, for comparing the pain, it is told in the scriptures that death is like 42,000 scorpions, not in installments, but biting at the same time. Now, if death is so painful, why did Dale Carnegie, who famous for this book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, commit suicide? Suppose you were to jump from a building and see 42,000 scorpions with their raised, sting looking at you. Anyone would dare do that? Then how did he do it? This means for him, living was more painful than 42,000 scorpions. Living one moment was like 45,000 scorpions. So which is better? 45,000 scorpions continuously biting for rest of your life, or once and for all one 42,000 scorpion bite and finish? That means this man was so miserable, so lonely, so much frustrated. For him, even 42,000 scorpion bite was better off. It's a relief from his inner misery. Therefore it is said, A subtle pain is more painful than very gross physical pain. That's why people commit suicide. It's like you're driving a car and a policeman catches you. 500 rupees or 3 months in the prison. Which is better? Both are miserable. But better to finish off 500 rupees, otherwise suffering for 3 months. It's like this. For him, the death was not a solution. It was a temporary solution from a permanent problem whole life. And this fellow writes how to win friends. Why? Because he may have seen two loving friends and their exchanges. It's a fact. When you love someone, you don't have to make an effort to remember his names and what his likes and dislikes are. But if you take the superficial aspect of the relationship and try to apply. And what was he saying? If you apply this, why? To exploit people. In business, make friends, send cards and all that. Establish a relationship. And what is the relationship? You scratch my back, I scratch yours. If you do it, okay. You stop, then I stop. Today, the relationship is not one of love. True love means sacrifice. If you love someone, you're ready to sacrifice everything for him. Today, it's a question of lust. I want what I want when I want. If you can give me, you're my husband, you're my wife, you're this, you're that, whatever. And you stop giving, you go your way, I go my way. Because of this, the relationships are so shallow. Therefore, we find so many divorces. People change their husbands or wives as they change clothes. In fact, today, people are frustrated with this lifestyle of marrying. Earlier, you know, oh, this is for my daughter, all this, you know, they are collecting for a whole life to be given. Planning, sometimes people are planning, for my marriage I'll do this. But nowadays, people are so frustrated of planning because they know after 2 years you don't know whether you'll continue to stay. Therefore, there is a new concept, living together. You know, let's try it out. If it works, it's like, you know, you go to a shop and there is a pressure cooker for sale. 3 months trial period. Try it out. If it works, okay. Otherwise, return it back. So people are so frustrated of developing a relationship. Let's try it out, you know, if it works. And some people are trying it out for many years. This didn't work, this didn't work, this didn't work, and it's going on. Because you will never get the ideal person whom you are looking for. That's an illusion. That was not the Vedic culture. Vedic culture, you don't even care about the face of that person. You care about so many other things. Anyway, we're not going to, that's not the purpose of this thing. The idea is, it's all so shallow and superficial. And therefore, we find so many problems. It's all very superficial. In every aspect of life, in diseases, all the technological advance, what is allopathy? Just suppressing the symptoms, not addressing the root cause. Now, what will you do if it is a psychophysical problem? Psychological problem which manifests. I know so many people, they are suffering from chest pain. They go to the doctor and say, your x-ray is all right, your this is all right, your this is all right. After spending 5,000, 6,000 rupees, then they say, you are perfectly all right, Baba, your mental problem, get out. You have no problem. No, doctor, I have a problem. Okay, you go to this fellow. Till that fellow gets frustrated, he goes on referring to some fellow to just get rid of you. You know, get rid of that person. Because you're not able to address every aspect. It's all superficial. Unless you go to the root cause. And therefore, this statement is not just true in one field. In every field, it's all through this technological advancement, we may have advanced, no doubt about it. But unfortunately, it's all become superficial and the essence of life is being forgotten. And therefore, people are so miserable, so much suffering, more than ever before. Divorces, more than ever before. Suicides, more than ever before. Stress, more than ever before. Anger, expression through blowing off buildings or blowing off someone's life. Common. Now, where have we gone wrong? That also solution is given. Because today's civilization is aiming towards false promises of happiness. And therefore, they are not addressing the root cause of how to find happiness. Or going to the root of the problem. They are just superficial. False promises of happiness. I'll give you a quick example. The most famous and opulent people are the most miserable and lonely ones. I have several examples. I don't want to go into the detail, but I'll give you the essence of what we are trying to speak. Today, success means how much you are able to acquire financially or from external gross material things. This is considered a happiness, or in terms of name and fame and prestige in society. That is considered happiness. And therefore, people who have found all this, sometimes, practically most of the times, because people may not reveal. Externally, they may be putting up a very good show of being happy, but deep inside, they're miserable, lonely, and alone. So, where have we gone wrong? Because it's a false promise of happiness. Do this and you'll be happy. Wear this and you'll be happy. Smell this and you'll be happy. In the scripture, there is one verse which explains this issue. Just listen to this. Such a great wisdom presented in just one verse. It says, Patanga matanga kuranga bhranga meena hata panchabhireva pancha eka pramathi sakatham nahanyate yah sevate panchabhirebhya pancha. I will explain what it is. Essence of what it says is, sense gratification is not the source of happiness. We think that if we gratify the external senses, the eyes, the nose, the ears, the sense of taste, and the sense of touch. This is what body is all about. For enjoying, we have the body, which means the senses. So the eyes wants to see something nice, the ear wants to hear something nice, the nose wants to smell, the tongue wants to taste, and the skin wants to touch something soft and nice. Now, that is considered happiness. Anyone who has access to that facility is considered to be successful, prestigious, and glorious. But why are they miserable? Because that cannot give happiness. Let's take this example. It says, Patanga. I don't know if you're aware. Patanga means the fire moth. If you have seen in the rainy days, if you light a candle or if there is a bulb, powerful bulb, all these fire moths, they come around and go around the fire or the source of light. You put a light, put a candle in a dark place during rainy season. So many of these fire moths come. And these fire moths, they are very dexterous in their movement. They're quite quick, but their one weakness is their eyes. That's their weak point. Their eyes are attracted to the dancing flames of the fire. And they're so attracted, they can't resist themselves from going nearer the fire. As they go near the fire, they can feel the warmth. Then they can feel the heat of the fire. Still they can't resist. And ultimately, they enter the fire. They are being consumed by the fire. But they can't stop. Their eyes agitated. It wants that gratification. Even though they are being consumed by the fire. Today we find advertisements. Cigarettes. And inside, underneath is written, statutory warning. Cigarette smoking is injurious to health. You know that. Even a child knows that. But why are we buying it and smoking away to glory? You pay to be burnt. You know liquor causes liver problem and it actually burns. The first time I took it, I'm not taking it now. The first time I took it forcibly in a college annual day, forced to drink, and I was shocked. Why do these people drink this? Of course, later I got a little addicted. got used to this burn. Just because to be a part of the group. Peer pressure. But I was always wondering, what do they get out of this? Paying so much money just to be burnt out and just to act like they know that I am in a part of the group. So, Patanga, is the weakness is its eyes. Then, the other, each senses, five examples are given of five animals to be learned from nature. Matanga. Matanga means elephant. Elephant is so powerful, no human being can catch the animal, the elephant. But the elephant's weakness is its sense of touch. And a human being knows that. And therefore what he does, he trains a she elephant who comes and rubs beside the he elephant. And the he elephant goes wild and starts chasing her. And she is trained to go all over the forest and come near a huge pit which has been dug very deep and covered by some bamboos and grass, camouflage. And then she goes beside it and he is so mad after the touch that he actually walks into the pit, falls into it. And then that little Mahavat comes and starves him till the elephant, powerful elephant, which has the power to catch him and finish him off, becomes a slave to that tiny little human being who controls the elephant. He becomes a slave. Patanga, Matanga. Then there is Kuranga. Kuranga means deer. A deer is so agile. Quickly it just runs away. It's very difficult for the hunter to catch the deer. But its weakness is its sense of hearing. The deer is attracted to beautiful music on the flute. So the hunter, knowing its weakness, plays on the flute. And the deer stands still with his raised ear, just like sometimes the dogs do, you know, sleeping and then suddenly some. So the deer stands still to hear the music of the flute. And when he's still, it becomes a sitting duck for the hunter to shoot it down. Otherwise, it is so dexterous, so agile, it can move away. Patanga, the eyes. Matanga, the touch, sense of touch. Kuranga, the sense of the hearing. Kuranga, Bhrunga. Bhrunga means the honeybee. The honeybee is so powerful, it can drill a hole in this wooden door within no time. It has power to drill through. But its weakness is its sense of smell. So in an open lotus, there's a lot of nectar in the lotus. So the honeybee goes and sits inside the lotus and starts smelling it and drinking the nectar. And it is so intoxicated by the smell of the nectar that it's like almost like unconscious. And then it just sits there for long. And when the sun sets, the lotus closes. Now the leaf of the lotus, the petals of the lotus are so thin that you can have 50 of them and just put effortlessly a needle and it will come from the other side. It's very thin. But it is so helpless in its intoxicated stage of that smelling that nectar that it just can't get out. It forgets about its abilities and therefore it becomes, it dies because it is suffocated. It suffocates to death in a covered lotus. Because the next morning the lotus is going to open, by the time it suffocates to death. So early morning when the lotus opens, you find so many bees stuck in each of them. Patanga, Matanga, Kuranga, Bhrunga. And then there is the sense of taste. Classic example of how a very quick animal can become a prey because of its weakness of one sense is the fish's tongue. The fish is very slippery. Even after sometimes in the net also, if you are not careful, it just slips off. It has a slippery body in the watery, in the water. But its weakness is its tongue. So the fisherman puts a hook, very sharp hook, and puts some nice dough or some worm on it. And the fish is attracted and it just starts swallowing that. And as it swallows, expert fisherman doesn't pull it then. it swallows and the hook goes deep in. And once it enters inside, one tug, however slippery, however, you know, movable it may be, in 1 second it's out of the water, finished, and just suffers for some time before it dies. So the scriptures are giving 5 examples of each of these animals, where each one of the senses, if it goes astray because of its weakness, then it leads to its doom. Then it says, ekam pramathi, if one of the senses get agitated in these animals, they fall, go to their doom. Sa katham na hanyate, then what to speak of the human being, yah sevate panchavirebhya pancha, whose all the 5 senses have gone astray. The whole advertisement industry is to simply hook you to your senses. Earlier the billboards, first of all there were hardly any billboards in the 60s. And nowadays, maximum amount of money is spent in those billboards. Huge. And so colorful. So dazzling. Colorful. You feel as if, you know, he's going to walk out. That person is going to walk out of that billboard anytime. And even at night, throughout, it's very, very attractive and attention-seeking. Now, actually, what is advertisement? Advertisement means you don't need the product. Therefore, they have to advertise. Do you ever see an advertisement of chapatis or rice? Please eat rice. Please eat sabjis. These are the essential products. Advertisement means you don't need it. And to create a need, you have to just dangle a carrot in front. You don't have this, you are not a man. If you don't have this thing dangling from your lip, what kind of a man are you? Impotent fellow. Huh? You don't wear this particular shirt, then you are no status in society. If you don't have this car, then you won't get a partner. If you don't wear this underwear, name it and they have it. You don't need to advertise. Everyone will just cover their body, a civilized person. But everything, you name it and they have it. The whole industry is to just attract us. And just imagine, the eyes are attracting, the music is attracting, the smell is attracting, the sense of touch is attracting, the taste is attracting. And the man is like, he lost himself. Pulled on every side. Imagine a man being pulled on 5 sides by 5 people. What will be his situation? Stress. He's stressed because he has so much income and he has to satisfy all the senses. He has to buy all this product to become a he-man. Finished. And therefore he has to struggle hard and to make the 2 ends meet and the demands ever increasing. And the limit is less. And therefore, it says, ekah pramathi sakatham nahanyate yah sevate panchavirebhya pancha. So the scriptures say, true happiness is not to be found in mere gratification of the senses. This is not happiness. One has to go deep within to find the essence of oneself. And go to the root of the problem and solve the problem. That is human life. So what is the goal of human life? To summarize, the goal of human life is, number one, to inquire. Not to inquire about how to eat, how to sleep, how to mate, how to defend. That anyway, we have to do the needful. But if we really want to be happy, which is the nature of the individual, to find peace, to find bliss, to find happiness, and to avoid any kinds of misery, to inquire about a permanent solution to the real problems of life. No more birth, no more old age, no more disease, no more death. Permanent relief from all miseries. Miseries caused by body and mind, miseries caused by other living entities, miseries caused by natural disturbances. And finally, to seek, to inquire about a solution, or to seek an eternal life of bliss, peace, and happiness. Generally, I end the lecture at this point. And then I begin the slideshow. But in one time, when I did this, one man raised his hand. Even before the question answer session began. He said, "You have to answer me this question." I said, "Yes." He said, "Before I came to the class, I was so happy. And I came here to solve problems. You have now made me more miserable than before. Have I paid so much money just to know how miserable I am? You have disturbed me." I was so happy. I said, "The purpose of first lecture is achieved." I told him, "The purpose of the first lecture is this, to disturb you from your current situation where you think that everything is comfortable, just a little more, few steps, and I will become happy forever." It's like an intoxicated man. He's driving, you know, he's just walking somewhere thinking something. The only way to kind of bring him to his senses, sober him, is to take a bucket of cold water and splash him on his face. And he stops to think something. I said, unless the carpet is pulled from our feet, the foundation where we are standing, or the path that we are going, unless you just shake them up a little bit, people think that, yeah, it's anyway going on, everyone is going, I don't want to be an odd man out, you know, everyone is doing, therefore I'm doing. We can't have the sheep mentality. One jumps, everyone jumps. Keep a stick in a sheep, in front of a sheep, you know, a herd. One jumps, second jumps, third, and then you remove the stick, the fourth will jump, the fifth will jump, even though the stick is not there. Why? Next one is jumping, so everyone should jump. At this point, everyone should jump. It's a sheep's mentality. Everyone is going to hell, then why do you want to go to hell? I said, I have achieved the purpose. You are sitting in a boat which has a hole in it. And if someone tells you, "Dear sir, there is a hole in your boat," come on, don't be so pessimistic. I think you are envious of me because I have such a nice boat. "That's all right, sir, but there's a hole in it." Don't be pessimistic. So I said, "At least you have realized there is a hole in your boat. That is the success." So the purpose of this whole first session is to stop us, to make us realize that the path that we are treading right now for seeking peace, bliss, and happiness is not the path. In fact, it is guaranteed to end in doom. It is guaranteed to make you more miserable. The first part of the Bhagavad Gita, first chapter, there is no solution. The first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, running into the second chapter, 10th verse, is simply the problems of Arjun. And at the end of it, Arjun says, "Krishna, I'm telling you all my problems and I'm telling you all the solutions, but my solutions are not solving my problems. And therefore, now I want you to solve the problem." Till then, Krishna was sitting quiet. Because amongst friends, there cannot be a solution. Two friends are talking. "What do you think?" "I think like this, but I think otherwise." "Okay, bye." There's no solution. Therefore, Arjun says, "Karpanya dosho upata swabhava. I am a miser, I'm not able to solve my problem. Prichhami tvam. I'm asking you, dharma sammudha chetaha. I have lost my vision. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to solve my problems. Yat shreyah. What is ultimately beneficial for me? Nishchitam bruhitanme. Please tell me, confirmed solution. Shishyasteham. I am your disciple." Shishya means shishtachar. Disciple means ready to be disciplined. "I am ready to take shelter of you. No more friendly talks. Please instruct me. I am surrendered unto you." Humbly he approaches. Then Krishna begins speaking the Bhagavad Gita because he sees that this person is now receptive. He has understood that he is not able to solve his problems. with the solutions that he has or with the solutions that he is trying to make. That is the beginning where Bhagavad Gita comes into picture. A person should be convinced that I have, number one, I have some problems. Number two, I have some solutions, but these solutions are not solving my problems. Therefore, I need some solutions. Let's seek an alternative. That's open-mindedness. Forget the Gita. Be very open. Forget, this is not Hinduism, this is not this. Let's discuss about objective, very scientifically, as some solutions. If it makes sense, grab it. If it doesn't, throw it. Consider it. 1 week of your life is not going to go away. There are so many things we have been doing all over. Let's try it out. We have been trying so many new soaps. Every time the advertisement is there, let's try this one. There is some foam in it. There is some bubbles that comes. So this is a solution. But this is time tested. Since time immemorial, people have adopted it and seen it successful. So therefore, this is the this is where I end today. But this is not to leave you just hanging. The whole idea is the current situation is not suitable right now. Therefore, we're going to present the alternate. And that will be the lecture for tomorrow. Can we have the slides? So, can we have the lights off? Lights off, please. Only the lights. If possible, even the outside ones. Can we put up on the whole screen? Is it possible? Well, so here we see a beautiful little cute chimp. Next. See some resemblance? Quite close, right? Here we see a little nice family of jungle cats. Next. There is another family. Many things are resembling. This tendency, biological instincts are there. Facial features may resemble. And it is described that there are four things that are common. Eating, we find here, this bear, it makes arrangements. It's not gone to school, not gone to college, and learned how to, you know, eat. But it makes, solves its problem of eating. Next. And we may have wonderful facilities, technologically advanced ways, revolving restaurants, revolving tables, whatnot. But the propensity of eating and the, you know, satisfaction that is derived from eating is the same. Next. Sleeping. You see this cheetah. No worry. No yogi can sleep at this angle. Imagine the animals. They don't mind. They sleep in any place. Sleepy, wherever they find a place, they go to sleep. The dog sleep in the middle of the street, you know. Amazing. All the traffic going on, is blissfully asleep. Whole morning. And whole night he barks, of course. So, and here we find, of course, this is a very modest picture. Earlier I had another picture of a man sleeping with an alarm clock. You know, he has to catch the 6:30 Virar fast or Churchgate fast. So even while sleeping, you are in tremendous anxiety to get up. Huh? Always. So, in spite of the fact that we may have made arrangements, then mating, it's only seasonal for the animals. But then for the human beings, next, they're sophisticated, but it goes on all around the year. Next. Everywhere, every place, every time. And defending, the animals may do with their claws and their teeth. Next. And the human beings have developed a very sophisticated system But the mentality is the same. They stand on the border and start barking. The dogs also bark. If another dog bark, dogs that comes into its zone, then it starts barking. Bow, bow, get out, get out. This barking propensity is done by in the border, you know, LOC. And from there you start shooting. This is my area, that is your area, get out. Next. So the only difference is the animals do it under the table and you are doing it over the table. But the mentality is just the same. Therefore we are called sophisticated, polished, well-dressed, two-legged animals. Next. We are one among them. The mentality is the same. You may be well-dressed, you may have a pipe dangling from your mouth, six-piece suit, but you are simply one among them in the sense that you're just part of the that mentality is just part of the animalistic propensity. Next. Therefore, human life actually begins when we start thinking about, is there actually something beyond this? I do not want certain things in life, certain sufferings, problems. Why is it being imposed upon me? I want peace, happiness, bliss. Why is it eluding me? This inquiry marks the beginning of human form of life. And then one starts meditating on the nature of this world, the problems, beginning with birth. Imagine, can any one of us sit like this for even a minute? But to be packed like this for 9 solid months, of course, 3 months of organogenesis, 6 months being packed up like this, a yogi also cannot sit like this for long. To be packed up like this, bitten by worms and burnt by the spicy food that the mother takes through the umbilical cord, it is passed to the child. It's miserable, waiting for the time to come out. Next. And then there is old age, inevitable. No one wants it, no one can avoid it. It's common to all, whoever you are. Disease. Small way or a bigger way, today or tomorrow, in one form or the other, one organ or the other, but inevitably it's a fact of life. It's going to come. And ultimately death. These things are not simply for one religion or one geographical area or one community or one caste. This is for every living entity in this universe. Next. No doubt, we may be technologically advanced. We may say that today we have reached advancement. There are advanced people, you know. Actually, Vedic culture is simple living and high thinking. That was Vedic culture. Simple living, high thinking. But unfortunately, today it's the opposite way. High living, simple thinking. Literally high living. You live on the 150th floor. But what is your thinking? How to eat, how to sleep, how to mate, how to defend. Next. We may have gone to the moon. But have we solved these problems? Billions of dollars, I think $84 billion spent to go to the moon. Can you imagine in the 1960s? $84 billion, right? 24, how much is it? Something is written there, I'm not able to see. So many billions of dollars spent, and can you go back? No. Anyway, forget it. So, no, forget it. Can't go back? This is the technological problem. Anyway, so it's not able to solve. You, after going there, we have brought some moon rocks And that, and you saw that picture there, that moon rock being displayed. And this rock, to see that you have to pay $10. $24 billion for that rock, piece of rock. And we say we are advanced. Okay, we may have got to the moon. But then, even if you did so, have you solved the real problems of life? Next. There is this lady from All India Institute of Medical Sciences, AIIMS, Delhi. As a psychologist, she has made a statement, study. She studied of the influence of children, influence of television on children. Indian, this is some of the studies. She says there are three problems, very, very distinctly that comes. Number one, they become insensitive to violence. Number two, they become extremely fearful of certain things. And thirdly, they become violent. They become violent. Violent behavior, beating up someone, torturing someone, things like that. Next. You can't have kind of conversation with this. In fact, it makes people so impersonal. After this, people just sit watching in front of it for hours together. Not only their physical, social, but even emotional life is completely dulled. Many problems. Today people, why do you see, early morning you see chapati, so many people going for brisk walks. Why? Because most of the physical kind of activity is dulled. Sitting right in front of the computers for long hours, sitting in front of the television, from there sitting in the car, then sitting here, then sitting there. Practically no this kind of lifestyle. Therefore, artificial kind of lifestyle has created so many problems that forcibly, and it also makes people so impersonal. And they don't socialize, they don't mix with some people. I remember once I went to a home and I knocked at the door. The servant came and opened the door and said, just 1 minute. And for 20 minutes, no one turned up. But I was hearing voices of every family member inside. Then I opened the door. I was a little fearful of being very not decent, but I just opened the door and peeped in a little. After 20 minutes, then I saw from grandmother to the grandchild, everyone is sitting in front of the television and with their biting their fingernails, watching the... And then I realized it was the last over of some international cricket. And that old lady says, just 1 minute, just 1 minute. It's almost over. I was amazed. And Atithi Devo Bhava. That's Vedic culture. Anyway, makes people so really insensitive to needs of people. Yes, we may have technologically advanced, but it's like almost become like a concrete jungle. The consciousness of people is simply animalistic. Next. No wonder we are in an age of machines, where complicated machines are created, computers, mobiles and things like that. But simultaneously, human beings are also becoming like machines. So impersonal, so depressed, so frustrated, so stressed, so much in anxiety, fear, tension, worry. Literally people have become like robots, insensitive to the needs of people around, absorbed totally to just to make the two ends meet. They have to struggle for existence. It's become the name of the game today. Not realizing why they are doing what they are doing. Where are they supposed to be heading in life? Next. Great personalities whom we worship, aspiring to imitate them or following their footsteps, have been actually the most miserable and lonely people, who externally putting up a show of success, name, fame, etc., of wealth, possession, etc., have been the most miserable and lonely ones. Committed suicides most of the times, or died insane or going mad, things like that. Depressed. Next. Therefore, the scriptures say that sense gratification or gratifying the senses, external superficial senses, is not the goal of life. Sense gratification means you are actually embracing death. Embracing the doom. Next. We discussed about how the moth, fire moth, is attracted to the flames of the fire. Next. The elephant, because of the weak sense of touch, is captivated, it becomes a slave. The deer becomes a sitting duck for the hunter to shoot him down. The fish, because of its sense of taste, becomes a victim. In this way, what to speak of the human being who, day in and day out, through various kinds of forms of so-called entertainment, is being bombarded on all sides. There are TVs and videos and things to occupy his eyes. Then there are music, and then there is liquor, then there is this and that, etc., to occupy his senses and pull him out from all sides. And his heart is burning within, not able to understand why. This is the situation of today's man. I wish I could show it on a bigger screen. His face is very important. His expression you should see. He has every facility in his bathtub. He can contact the other corner of the world, but his face is miserable. This is a cartoon about a situation of a present day man. It represents very, very typically what is the consciousness of a person of this day and age. Normal person. Next. So the whole purpose of this lecture is not to simply scare us or make us more miserable than what we are. The solution or the purpose of this lecture is to inform us that the boat that we are on right now is going to sink because this boat has a hole in it. The whole propaganda of material life promising happiness is like the promise of the Titanic. In 1920s, there was a ship Titanic. I'm sure many of you may be aware. When it was manufactured, it was the state of the art at that time. The most complicated machine ever created by the British. And it was claimed that this was an ocean liner, a ship that even God cannot sink. This was the title that ran on the head of the newspapers at that time when it was about to set sail. And on the 13th day of its maiden voyage, the top people from the whole country were there to be part of that trip. And they were so confident that this ship will never sink that they had removed all the small boats which are used in times of emergency. And over 1,000 people, when this ship hit an iceberg, it was just sliced through. And ultimately that unsinkable ship sunk into the bottom of the ocean on its maiden voyage. So the whole propaganda of this material technological advancement of this civilization claiming that it's going to give happiness to people is like the claim of Titanic to saying that it's going to be unsinkable. But the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarvam jnana plavenaiva vrijinam santarishyasi. Jnana plavena, plava means boat. He tells Arjun, O Arjun, the knowledge that I am speaking to you at this time on this battlefield of Kurukshetra, jnana plavenaiva, by this knowledge, this transcendental boat of knowledge, vrijinam, vrijinam means the ocean of miseries, santarishyasi. Tarishyasi means to cross, but santarishyasi means surely, effectively, comfortably, easily, you will be able to cross over the ocean of birth and death. This is Krishna's promise to Arjun in the Bhagavad Gita when he talks about this knowledge. So the whole idea is not simply to scare people, but to make them realize that the current propaganda that this life will give happiness is simply a farce. And therefore to shake us up and to create this in our heart, a thirst for searching out for the actual solution to solve the problems of life. That is the purpose of the Gita. And therefore, this is the purpose of the first day's lecture. To what is the necessity for Bhagavad Gita? Because if we don't understand why we require the Bhagavad Gita, why should we spend 6 more days? Unless we are sure that it's going to be helpful. How is it going to help us? This is going to permanently solve all the real problems of our life eternally. This is guaranteed. How and why? Come tomorrow. Can we have the lights on? So, thank you very much. I'm sorry we are a little late beyond time. But before I conclude, I would like to take a couple of questions if there are any. Anyone has any questions regarding what we have spoken so far? Of course, I would like to tell you, this course is designed in such a way that most of the questions that you have today will be answered tomorrow. And most of the questions that you will have tomorrow will be solved the day after. That's not to discourage you, but if you have any question that is burning issue and you can't sleep tonight, if you don't get answer, you can ask it. Yes. Can we have the mic? We'll just pass the mic to you.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
Today is the first day of our course.
Yeah.
We got a very brief introduction, a 2-line introduction about yourself. Can you know a little more about how you got attracted to Krishna consciousness?
That is beyond the scope of this class.
Yeah, in fact, I should have told that. So, if possible.
Anyway, in connection with this, I can tell you, truly, being a counselor, whenever I built rapport with my cases, patients, one thing I would ask them were, as I said, so you must be very happy. I didn't know much anything about Bhagavad Gita then. So you must be happy because the institute that I was working, it was a speech and hearing institute dealing with the deaf and dumb, or we say speechless. So because this was the only institute, the place where I was working, we had people from the lowest rung of life, from the footpath, to some, you know, Spanish ambassador and their children and whatever. So, invariably when I went little deeper into their lives, because I would express myself, I would express my heart, unless there is reciprocation, nobody will open their heart. Invariably I came to the same conclusion that there is tremendous fear, tension, worry, anxiety within the heart of every being. Irrespective of their economic status, social status, marital status, whatever, in every condition. This set me actually thinking. And surprisingly, the fellow who gave me the solution or who gave a framework within which I could find all solutions to my immediate problems, what I was seeking, was a person who was deaf from birth. This amazed me because I saw I am supposed to be a normal person. And here is a handicapped person. But this man, because he has the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, not only is he effortlessly able to overcome his handicap, but extend himself to assist others, so-called normal people, to solve their problems. We consider the handicap to be a liability to the society. But he made me realize that that is not the superficial external handicap is actually not a handicap. The real handicap is when a person doesn't have this knowledge of how to solve the problems in life. And to get this knowledge, no handicap is a handicap. And I wanted to dedicate, in fact, the reason why I joined that profession, speech and hearing course, was to serve the disabled. And I realized that 0.3% of the people are hearing handicapped. But after hearing him, I realized 99.9% are spiritually handicapped. And here I was trying to help the handicapped people. Earlier, because he was not able to speak, all his problems he kept to himself. But now I'm teaching him to speak. Now he shares his problem with 10 others and makes others also in anxiety. So he was better off when he was not speaking. He had his problem to himself. So I may give some speech, which is okay, something better than nothing, but I'm not able to actually go to the root of the problem. And here was a so-called handicapped man. Because he has knowledge of this, his handicap was not a liability, but he was in fact an asset to the society, because he was able to elevate and help and relieve the problems of so-called normal people who are supposed to be assets to the society. Then I realized, anyway, I want to serve the handicapped. Why not use that energy of my life to give this knowledge, which will make every person rise above their spiritual handicap? Because you can buy a speech pathologist, but for this, you must be convinced before you can convince others. Of course, I still don't consider myself a sadhu, this is a dress, whatever. But at heart, I'm as good as any one of you. But I'm sure of one thing, this knowledge can really, really make a person come out of the current state, at least make one realize how miserable life is without this knowledge. And once you have this knowledge, irrespective of which situation in life, a householder, a student, an engineer, a doctor, a housewife, whoever. Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Arjun on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when Arjun was trying to avoid his duty and said, I'm going to beg and live but not fight. The whole Gita was spoken to provoke Arjuna by elevating his consciousness to perform his duty, but simply change his consciousness. It's not what you do. Spiritual life is not what you do, but why you do what you do. You're clearly aware of why you're doing what you're doing. Spirituality is not a change of hairstyle. It's not a change of dress. It's not a change of location from one place to the other. It's a change of heart. It's a change of consciousness. Through knowledge, spiritual knowledge. And this increases the quality of our life and gives us true happiness and satisfaction and peace. This, I was convinced, and over so many years that I am seeing, people who have been touched by this philosophy, who have been given this access, have not only become happy and blissful themselves, but amazed by the potency of this knowledge, are dedicating their lives while staying in their own, doing their responsibilities. They are extending themselves to give this knowledge to everyone else. Practically, some of the reason why you are all here is probably some friend told you that you must attend this. It's very helpful. It has helped me. It will help you. Isn't it? Somebody has extended themselves as a well-wisher to share with you what they have relished, what they have understood, or they have benefited with. So, that's a brief introduction about how I came into this. One last question, if there is any, otherwise we'll stop here. So, I would like to thank all of you.